It is February the 15th, and we are on page 198 in our Chumash Creation Shir. And this will be, as we said, an abridged Shir. We are up to Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. So we've introduced the past couple of weeks the background, for the backdrop against which we're going to have the friction between the brothers. And here we now have the actual development of that friction. So it begins with a pasuk that is going to seem very difficult to us at first. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. V'Yisrael ahavas Yosef mikol banav. And Yisrael, meaning Yaakov, loved Yosef more than all his sons. From all his sons, he loved Yosef. Kiven zekunim hulo, for he was a child of his old age. V'asalo kesones pasim, and he made for him a fine woolen tunic. That's translated as, and that's the coat of many colors, the kesones pasim. Vayiru lechav, and his brothers saw ki oso ahav avihem bikol lechav, that he, his father, loved from all his brothers. Vayisne'u oso, and they hated him. V'lo yachlu dabero l'shalom, and they were not able to speak to him peaceably. They were not able to speak to him in peace. Okay, so at face value, what we have here is Yaakov, who has a favorite son. And, okay, so a parent has a favorite child. Perhaps that's not the best thing, but people have that. It does happen that there are parents who have a favorite child. And that, you can argue whether that's appropriate or inappropriate, but then he goes so far as to show that he's his favorite by making him this special coat. His brothers see that his father loves him more than them, so they hate him, and they're not able to speak to him in peace. So, the questions here are obvious. The first question is, how could Yaakov have made such a mistake? Yeah.
Except I notice it doesn't call him Yaakov, it calls him Yisrael.
Oh, okay, there's the key to the whole story. Oh. Excellent, wow. Excellent, very good. I was hoping someone would notice. Okay, good. In contrast, that, you know, we've been doing this in such a piecemeal manner. Contrast that to the first couple of verses in the parasha. Vayeshev Yaakov, in the first verse. Second one, Erev Peldos Yaakov. So now it switches to Yisrael. So we'll get to that. So the first question is, how could he have made such a mistake? It's one thing to say, and people do accuse, as much as I have defended our patriarchs and matriarchs, to point out that they are not like us. They are not subject to the same weaknesses that we are subject to. They were far greater than we are. And if we can figure something out, then they can certainly, we can be sure they figured it out themselves. It is presumptuous for us to assume that we are better parents than they were, except for cases where perhaps we learned a lesson from them, where no one else would have known until they made a certain mistake, and then we learn from that error. That's the only time that we can say that we're doing a better job. But to say that we are better parents because we would never play favorites, and to say that Yaakov played favorites, and had we been in his position, we never would have made such an error, that is presumptuous, and it is incorrect. It's a mistake. Because they were far greater people than we are, and understood life, understood the world far better than we do. But that's the first question. In fact, Chazal, our sages, criticize Yaakov for this. When our sages criticize, they have the right to criticize because they're getting it from Moshe Rabbeinu. They got it from Moshe, who got it from Hashem. And they criticize Yaakov, and they say that had Yaakov not, they say a person should never play favorites. That's what Chazal say. A person should never show favoritism with his children, because only because Yaakov made this coat of colors for his son Yosef, because of that, things developed and we ended up in Egypt. Because that's what caused the jealousy, and then Yosef was sold, etc., and the whole thing, and we ended up in Egypt. All because of this coat that Yaakov makes for Yosef. So our sages themselves criticize Yaakov for this this seemingly playing favorites. So there's the first question that we have to deal with, which is, how could he have made such a mistake? Second question we have to deal with is the verse right after that, verse 4. His brothers see that his father loves them more than all his brothers, and they hate him, and they cannot speak to him peaceably. Now this question is a little more subtle than the first question. I want you to take notice of the choice of words. Look back in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. V'Yisrael ahavas Yosef, and Yisrael loved Yosef, mikol banav, from all his sons. Yet Yisrael loved Yosef from all his sons. The next verse says, his brothers saw that he loved him, their father loved him from all his brothers. Why doesn't it keep it consistent? His brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his sons. It's directed at Yosef. The subject turns into Yosef. In the first verse, it says, Yaakov, what did Yaakov do? He loved Yosef more than all his sons, for he was a child of his old age, and he made for him this coat, this special coat, this special tunic. Then his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers. Why the focus on his brothers? The way I would have written it is that Yaakov's sons saw that he loved Yosef more than the rest of his sons. I wouldn't focus on brothers. After all, that's not the point over here. The point over here is that their father loves him more than he loves us. He loves that sibling of mine more than he loves me. I would have made it that my father is, I would have focused on the relationship between my father and me, not the fact that I'm his brother. So the switch from sons to brothers is a subtle change which needs attention. And the third point I want to bring up to you is another question that is asked almost universally, which is in verse 3 in Pasuk Gimel, Yisrael loved Yosef more than all his sons, or from all his sons, for he was his son of old age. Who was the youngest of the 12 sons? Binyamin, not Yosef. Yosef, in fact, was significantly older than Binyamin. Yosef was, when Yaakov left Laban's house, Yosef was 6 years old when Yaakov left Yosef's house, when Yaakov left Laban's house, before the birth of Binyamin. Then he was on the road for 2 years, and then Binyamin was born. The very last event before coming back to Yitzchak is that Binyamin is born. So Yosef is a full 8 years older than Binyamin. In this parasha, Yosef is 17 years old, Binyamin's only 9. What's the age difference between Yosef and the oldest son, Reuven? Yosef is 20, is 17. How old is Reuven at this time?
22.
About 20.
About 7 years.
Well, it's not quite 7 because they have to take into account the pregnancy. Yes, so, around 23. He's about 6 years, maybe 6 and change, mm-hmm. older than Yosef. So the age difference between Reuven and Yosef, and remember there are 11 boys in that group, is only 6 years and change, maybe 6 years and 3 months. That's it. In 6 years and 3 months, you have 11 boys being born. Obviously it's different mothers, but you have 11 boys being born. Then there's a break of 8 years, and then Binyamin is born. If I was going to have a favorite son because he is the one born of my old age, Binyamin is clearly the Ben Zikunim. He's the one that's born very late. He's the one who's much younger than the rest. He's the one who evokes certain emotions of, you know, my last son. It, not Yosef. So why is he called the Ben Zikunim?
Rabbi, you wouldn't say that, maybe I'm misunderstanding, that Yosef, didn't he learn with Yaakov?
Yes, he did.
So maybe that's why he was
okay.
he was his popular son.
Good. Okay, excellent. Very good. Okay, why not Binyamin also? Okay. So let's begin with what Dina pointed out, which is that the fact of the matter is that the Torah switches to Yisrael. Now we've discussed this before, that there are times the Torah uses the name Yaakov to refer to Yaakov, and sometimes it refers to Yisrael. There's another chapter.
Should I read this?
I guess, I don't know.
Okay, I'll read
it. Okay. So, there is sometimes Yaakov and sometimes Yisrael. When is Yisrael used rather than Yaakov?
When Yisrael takes the picture back.
What then?
When he wants the sons to take over.
Is that a good
as long as he was in charge of the sons, he was Yaakov. The one he
wants
to take back.
Okay, let's say it a little more sharply. You're right, but let's say it a little more sharply than that. What did we say about this back in the story with Reuven?
Say about what?
When the name Yisrael is used instead of the name Yaakov.
Yisrael is a spiritual.
We didn't say that distinction. What's that?
Pertaining to the nation.
Pertaining to the history. Pertaining to the future. Pertaining to the legacy. Yisrael is used when it is not referring to the immediate issues of family. When you're dealing with the long-range planning, you're dealing with, down the line, the legacy of the Jewish people, that's when the name Yisrael is used. We are called B'nai Yisrael. We're not called B'nai Yaakov. Because once you have a nation, we are the B'nai Yisrael. Yisrael is the name that connotes the great future of the Jewish people. Here, it doesn't say Yaakov loved Yosef from all his sons, because in fact Yaakov did not love Yosef more than his other brothers, more than his other sons. Yaakov didn't love Yosef more than them. Yaakov loved all of his sons because each son was important and precious. I'm sure his daughters are important and precious too. Each of the tribes has what to contribute, and Yaakov on his deathbed later in Parshas Vayechi will bless each and every one of his sons. Even the sons who it appears like he's chastising, we will see there he's actually blessing. Just the way that he brings across the blessing is purposefully done with a more sharp manner because that's what they needed to hear. But Yaakov loves his sons, and he does not play favorites over his sons as much as he loves them. However, Yisrael, as the name Yisrael, then Yaakov loves Yosef from all his sons. So what does that mean? What does it mean he loves him more? What does to love mean?
I think he saw looking to the future of the nation. There was a role there for Yosef to play. This is why he learned with them. Because he knew there would be a time he would be in Mitzrayim. And he would be faced away from the father. And so it's not just a simple shout that the brothers were jealous. You're talking like Yaakov preparing Yosef, what he knew his role needs to be in the future.
Okay. So what does it mean to love? What does the word love mean?
To give.
Okay, the way one comes to love is by giving.
Giving.
That is the way one comes to love. Yaakov, Yisrael, as Yisrael, gave more to Yosef than to the other sons, and therefore loved him more. See, what you give to, you love. That is the way love comes about. This is a very famous explanation of the word ahav, or ohev, that root in verse 3. Aleph hevav, veis, excuse me. That the root of ahav is the two letters, heves, hav, means to give in Aramis, in Aramaic. And so there's a correlation between giving and to love. When we take, we don't love the person who we're taking from. When we give, we love the person to whom we give. And the reason why we love the person to whom we give is because when we give, we identify with that person. When I mentor somebody, then I feel that that person is an expression of me. And therefore, since we naturally love ourselves, we love the other person through giving to that person. That's why a parent naturally loves a child, because a parent sees themselves in that child. A Rebbe naturally loves the student because they see themselves in the student.
Why he gave Yosef more?
So why did he give Yosef more? So because, as was already mentioned by a few of you, because Yosef had a role to play that was, as we mentioned in our introduction in the past couple of weeks, that was really a bridge between Avos and Banim, between fathers and sons, between the patriarchs and the tribes. Yosef is on the one hand a son, and therefore a tribe. On the other hand, he is an Av, he is a patriarch. And he has this dual mission. And Yaakov recognizes that Yosef has this dual mission. Therefore, Yosef needs more instruction from Yaakov than the other sons. Moreover, as we mentioned when Yosef was born, Yosef is the one who is the arch enemy. He is the one who ultimately will defeat Edom, Esav. Yosef is Sitno shel Esav. What does Sitno mean? It comes from the root Satan. He is the Satan of Esav. We don't use the term Satan the same way the Christian world does. We use the term to mean that which is against somebody, up against the other person. Yosef is the one who ultimately defeats Edom. We know that the ultimate struggle that we have is our struggle with Esav, with Edom. And Yosef is the one who, through whom we will defeat Edom. It's not that the other brothers were unimportant. They were important as well. But in this most important struggle, Yosef is the one who had to have special training for his most important job.
Where's the makor for that?
What's that?
Where's the makor for that?
Makor for what?
That Yosef is the special...
As we talked about many weeks ago when Yosef was born. About he was the one to defeat. He will be the one to defeat Edom. Now, as a result of this, Yaakov learned with Yosef. He studied with Yosef more than with the other sons, and studied with him special learning that he needed to know the other ones didn't need to know as much. The Gemara tells us that whatever Yaakov learned in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver, he transmitted that to Yosef. Now, notice what the Gemara says. The Gemara does not say that which Yaakov learned from Yitzchak, he transmitted to Yosef, because whatever he learned from Yitzchak, he transmitted to all of his sons. But that which he learned from Shem and Aver, that he transmitted to Yosef. The Gemara says that Yosef looked like Yaakov, and the Gemara says there are many similarities between Yosef and Yaakov throughout their lifetimes. The Gemara says that just as Yaakov was hated by his brother, Yosef will be hated by his brothers. The Gemara tells us that when Avraham was told in the Bris Ben HaBesarim, in the covenant between the halves, that his children would be slaves in a land not their own, when that prophecy was said, there was a decree that his children would have to end up in Egypt as slaves. The Gemara says that the decree originally would have been, or was, that Yaakov would be dragged down to Egypt in chains. How that would have happened, I don't know, because it didn't happen. But that's what was supposed to happen. That somehow or other, Yaakov would have been chained and dragged down to Egypt. But because Yosef instead was bound and taken down to Egypt, that meant that it was not necessary anymore for Yaakov to be chained and dragged down to Egypt. Because if it happened to Yosef, that was as if it happened to Yaakov. Yosef, in many ways, stood in his father's place. And so, Yosef has that distinction. Because of this distinction, Yaakov makes for Yosef this special coat, this special tunic. The Vilna Gaon shows that this tunic that he gave him was not more expensive than the clothing of the other sons. The price was the same, but it was made differently. Yaakov made it himself, it appears like. It says, Va'asalo, he made for him. Didn't have it made, he made it himself. For Yosef. Apparently, this tunic was important for Yosef. He needed this tunic in order to be able to fulfill his mission. Why did he need this tunic to fulfill this mission?
Leadership quality.
What's that?
Shows leadership
quality. It shows leadership quality. How does the tunic show leadership quality?
Because it's a garment of royalty.
It's a garment of royalty. It's the garment of leadership. Later on, Yosef will wear garments of royalty, but not this one. What happens to this one?
They
take it off of him when they sell him. They take it from him, and they put blood on it, and they show it to their father in order to make it seem as if Yosef was killed. So this tunic does not end up being that garment of royalty. In the end, Paro dresses Yosef in garments of royalty, and Yosef ends up, therefore, leading us in Egypt. Now, let's understand something over here, which is crucial to fully grasp what is going on with Yosef. This is something which we'll have to deal with more in depth when we get to it in the later parashios. And this also involves a class which I delivered a few years ago about Pesach. And we don't have the time, and this is not the forum, to really go into this in depth. But Yosef becomes viceroy. So Yosef is the king. He's royalty. Isn't Yehuda the king? Doesn't King David, isn't he the king? Yehuda's descendants, David and his descendants, isn't he the king? Why is Yosef the royal one? More than that, in the future we know that there's not one Mashiach that we're waiting for, but there are two. There is Mashiach ben David, who is a direct descendant of King David, who will sit on the throne. He will become our king. But there is another Mashiach, and he is Mashiach ben Yosef. We don't know much about Mashiach ben Yosef. We know very little about Mashiach ben David. We certainly know very little about Mashiach ben Yosef. There's very obscure references to this Mashiach ben Yosef. All we do know is that there will also be a Mashiach ben Yosef. What is the role of this Mashiach ben Yosef? What is the role of this Mashiach? What is he doing? Don't we only have one king? And isn't it the direct descendant of David HaMelech? But let me ask it a little differently. In Egypt, did Yosef become the king?
No.
What did he become?
Viceroy.
The viceroy. That's the crucial point. Yosef never becomes and was never meant to be the king. Yosef becomes and was always meant to be the viceroy, the second in command, the assistant rabbi. Don't tell Rabbi Fanach HaSadeh. That's what Yosef always was meant to be. Yosef's role is that of the second in command. Now, it's true, he is ultimately running the country of Egypt, but he is not the king. Yosef's power is the power of the shor, of the ox. That's his power. He's called a shor. Later on, we're going to see several references to Yosef as being an ox, as being a shor. The ox, the shor, as far as the constellations go, is not that of Nisan, of the first month. Rather, it's that of Taurus, of Iyar, the second month. It's the second in command. That's what Yosef is. Yosef's role was not to usurp his brother Yehuda as being the leader. His role was to pave the way for the leader. Because in the future, the only thing we really know about Mashiach ben Yosef is that he will pave the way for Mashiach ben David. How will he pave the way? Who will he be? How will we know who he is? Will he be Ashkenazi or Sephardi? We don't know any of these answers. We don't know anything about it. There's no way to know. What about Mashiach ben David? We don't know these things either. And to delve into it is a waste of time, like the Rambam says. We don't know. And when it happens, we'll know. We'll know. But there's no reason to delve into it. But we do need to know that there is the concept of Yosef paving the way for David. Yosef is, Yaakov is preparing Yosef for the role of paving the way for the future. That's what he's giving him the preparation for. Nevertheless, Yaakov is criticized by our sages for having made this tunic. In the end, the tunic is not used for that purpose. That proves that it was a mistake. The very fact that it wasn't used proves it. Because here Yaakov made something with his own hands to make something for the purpose of Yosef paving the way, and it's never used. It's only used, in fact, to trick Yaakov into thinking that he had died. So it was not in the end useful, and therefore Yaakov is criticized. But we have to understand this criticism is a subtle criticism. Yaakov wasn't wrong in understanding that Yosef needed a tunic. That was correct. Because Yosef was going to be the one to pave the way for royalty. That's correct. The mistake was giving it to him at this time in his life. Yaakov was of the opinion, Yosef needed it in order to learn how to be that figure of royalty. He needed it. Perhaps Yaakov even felt that Yosef needed it so the brothers would notice and realize Yosef's ultimate role. I don't know. But I do know that Yaakov's mistake was a subtle error, and in the end, it caused problems. Ben Zikunim, a son of his old age, the Gemara tells us that later on, and hold the place on 198, I'm going to turn to someplace which is not a story at all, but I want to show you the incredible depth of the Hebrew language in the Chumash and shed some light on this word Zikunim. Turn please to Parashas Kedoshim, which is on page
6:56.
It starts at 6:56, but we want page 6:60. Is that what we want? Excuse me. Nope, that's not what we want. I went too far. I'm sorry. I can't find what I want. I want the verse about standing up for an older person. Apologize for the delay. For the verse about standing up for an older person.
Maybe 6:65. In the presence of old person, you shall rise.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much. 6:64 and 6:65. Thank you very much. Excellent. Okay, in Parshas Kedoshim, 6:64, Pasuk Lamedbeis, verse 32. Mipnei seiva takum. In front of an old person, you shall get up. In the presence of an old person, shall you rise. V'hadarta p'nei zaken. And the English says, and you shall honor the presence of a sage. Now, that word zaken generally means an old man. But that's not the way they translate it. They translate it as a sage. How do they know they translate it as a sage? So, our sages tell us that the word zaken does not mean old, in this context. The way they know that is because it already said an old person. It says, Mipnei Seva Taklum, that you need to get up in the presence of an old person. So we already know that in front of someone who is older, you must get up. So then why does it then say, and you shall honor the presence or the face of a Zakein? So our sages tell us, Zakein doesn't mean old in this context. It means Zeh, it's an acronym. Zayin Kufnun is Zeh Shekana Chachma. It's the one who has acquired wisdom. Now, typically, someone who's acquired wisdom is old, because it takes a long time to acquire wisdom. You don't become a sage at tender years, because it takes years to become a sage. That's why there's a relationship between the word zakein, which means old, and zakein, which means zeshakana chachma, this one who's acquired wisdom. But the word zakein doesn't just mean old, it means an old person who is wise, a sage. Back on page 198, when it says that Yosef was a ben zekunim, he was a son of Yaakov's old age. Yes, Yosef was the 11th of 12. But the true meaning our sages tell us, and Rashi explains, is that he is the one who was himself wise and gave wisdom to his father Yaakov. There was a special wisdom that Yosef had that Yaakov recognized in Yosef and realized that Yosef was the one who had this special mission and needed to be treated differently. That's why he's referred to as a ben zekunim, the son of the one of wisdom. And that's why he showed him this favoritism. In the next verse, so what went wrong? The brothers saw that his father loved him from all his brothers, and they hated him, and they could not speak to him in peace, peaceably. As we mentioned in our couple of weeks' introduction to this whole story, Yosef, if he has a fault at age 17, and remember, and I have to stress this again, this is not a 17-year-old kid the way we think of 17-year-old kids. This is not somebody who's walking around, strutting around in his cloak, saying, look at me. You know what I'm going to be when I get older. He wasn't like that. He was not someone who was full of himself and had no appreciation for his place in the world, his true place in the world. But still, on his level, which at 17 was far above our level, but on his level, nevertheless, he was not, as we mentioned, he didn't command that sense of age. He wasn't someone who came across as being disproportionately older than his years. And as a result, when he was wearing this tunic from his father, and when he was trying to learn the ways of royalty and this special mission, it evoked jealousy in his brothers. The reason why it focuses on brotherhood, it says that he loved him more than all his brothers, is because they saw Yosef as not Yaakov as having done a crime. They didn't look at it as Yaakov, oh, he's playing favorites. They looked at it that Yosef is going to abuse and misuse this privilege of wearing this tunic and of having this special mission. They were afraid that ultimately Yosef would crown himself as the only true heir to Yaakov, as the only true Jew, and just as the line goes to Yitzchak and Yishmael is out of the picture, and it goes to Yaakov and Esav is out of the picture, they were concerned that Yosef would do the same thing. It would be Yosef and the 11 brothers are out of the picture.
Why did they feel that?
Because they did not see Yosef as being someone who was going to include them in whatever mission he had. Now, in the event, of course, Yosef does include them. Yosef was apparently at this point in his life had not fully developed the ability to both have a special mission and yet include everybody else. And again, I know that I'm repeating myself, but it's so easy to slip into visions of examples that we know of, either in our personal lives or public lives, etc. We know of people who do this. And we have to understand that's not what Yosef was. He was far more adept at what he had to do at his young years than anybody that we can draw examples from today. Nevertheless, on his level, on their level, Yosef evoked a certain jealousy in his brothers. And it is through the tunic that it happened. So Yaakov is criticized for having given the tunic to Yosef at that age. And ultimately, the brothers do feel jealousy for the way Yosef is acting. The Gemara tells us, and Rashi cites it, that there, in this verse, verse 4, Pasuk Dalet, we do see a complementary trait of the brothers, even though it's telling us something negative. They hated him, and they were unable to speak to him peaceably. The Gemara tells us that most of the time, when one person strongly dislikes another person, and they are nevertheless in a position where they have to deal with that person, they will fake it. Inside, they will detest the person they're speaking to. Inside, they will loathe the person they're speaking to. Inside, they will think all kinds of negative comments about the person they're speaking to, but they will speak to that person anyway and hide it. The brothers would have no such thing. The brothers, if they were unable to love him, they were not going to fake their love. Now, this has to be understood very carefully. There's two ways that this can happen. You see, there are many commentaries that write, but you can find it in the Ramchal, in Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto's writings, in Mesillas Yesharim, in The Path of the Just. You can find it later in more contemporary writings, like in the Mechtav Me'Eliyahu, in Rabbi Dessler's books, that when a person wants to feel a certain way and doesn't, let's say a person, the classic example is, a person is lazy. I don't feel like going to shul. I don't feel like going to study Torah. I don't feel like getting up and helping somebody who needs my help. So, and I do it anyway, but I drag my feet. So, all of the Musar books advise, if you don't feel like it, run to do it. Get up and run. If you don't feel like going to shul, get up and pretend that you do. Act as if you do. Run as if you were so excited about the opportunity to go to shul. Do that a little while, and after a while, you will be excited about it. If you don't feel like getting up to help somebody, fill in the blank, your child, your sibling, your parent, your friend needs help and they're kvetchy and you don't want to help them, yet you force yourself and you run with a smile on your face, after you do that a few times, it will happen. You will want to do it with a smile on your face. Because the way we act outwardly affects the way we feel inwardly. The chitzonios, the outward appearances, affect the pnimios, affect the inside. That is a case where a person is supposed to and should act in a way that they don't really feel. That's acceptable. Not just acceptable, that's preferable. Then there's the hypocrite. The hypocrite is the person who really feels one thing, but pretends something else. They're living a lie. They're living something because I don't want anybody else to think negatively about me. I want them to think that I am one thing when I'm really not. I want them to think that I am a generous person, so I will act generous in front of people, but I'm not really generous. I want them to think that I'm a Baal Chesed, that I'm a kind person, so I'm going to act kind in front of people, but I'm not really kind. I want people to think I am pious. I want people to think I am learned. I want people to think that I study hard and that I pray well. So when I'm in front of people, I'm going to pretend that I do that all the time, but really, behind closed doors, I don't act that way. That is a lie, and that is hypocrisy. and that is very, very negative behavior. What's the difference between the two? The difference is, what's that?
The people. Once you do it, you go, you do it with a smile, even if you don't think so. But it's not because people are looking at you.
Okay. The question is the motivation. Am I doing it because I'm trying to change myself, or am I doing it because I'm trying to trick people? If I'm doing it to change myself, then that's great, and it will work. If I run, not because I want people to see that I'm running because I want to run, I want to run. I want to make myself want to run. So that's why I'll run. That's a great thing. But if I'm running because, oh, they're watching, I want them to see that I'm a very pious person, I'm going to run, that's a terrible, terrible motivation. It all has to do with why I'm doing it. If I'm doing it because I want to train myself, that's a great thing, and it will work. If I'm doing it because I want to pull the wool over everybody's eyes, that's a terrible thing, and it will not work. The brothers really detested Yosef because they felt that Yosef was, as we will see later, a rodef. What is a rodef? A rodef, go ahead. A pursuer. A rodef we will see later in the Chumash, and I'll show it to you, Bli Neder, without a binding vow. When we get to the verses about their selling Yosef, first they want to kill Yosef. Why would they want to kill Yosef? We'll see later that there is a law in the Torah that if someone is trying to kill you, you should kill him first. The Torah itself sanctions a preemptive strike. If someone is trying to kill you, it says, Hashkem Lahargo, get up early and kill him. What conjures up in your mind is the person set their alarm for 9 a.m. You should set your alarm for 6 a.m. and get up and kill him first. That's the comical way of thinking about it. But that is a law in the Torah. They understood, or they thought Yosef was a rodef. He was out to get them. He was going to write them off and leave them out of Judaism, of Hashem's plan. And therefore, they genuinely hated him. They didn't hate him because they didn't like the way he looked. They didn't hate him because he was annoying. They hated him because they felt that he was out to get them. So they had no interest in training themselves to love him. They weren't trying to change themselves. They felt it was a justifiable hate because of what he was trying to do to them. And as a result, they weren't going to fake it. If they would have hated him because he's annoying, well, then I don't want to hate him. I don't want to hate him. I mean, he doesn't deserve our hate. So then the brothers would have trained themselves not to hate him. First of all, they probably wouldn't have hated him in the first place, but if they would have, they would have trained themselves not to. And in that case, you pretend to love him, not so that he'll think you love him, but you do it so that you will actually train yourself to love him, just like running to shul. But if they genuinely hated him and they felt it was justifiable and they had no interest in changing themselves, then they weren't going to fake it. And that is a praiseworthy trait. They were not able to speak to him peaceably. They did not speak to him and pretend they loved him when they really didn't. He knew they were upset with him, and he would not speak to them peaceably. Yeah.
Well, we decided that Yosef was a troublemaker, and that's one of the reasons why they hated him, because he kept on telling lies to his father about them, you know, all the time.
Well, he didn't lie to them. As we explained last week, he did not lie. You have to listen to last week's class. He did not lie at all. We explained these verses very in depth of what the difference of opinion was between Yosef and the brothers, and it was a difference of opinion, and that's what he was reporting. But it wasn't a lie.
No, I know, but they thought it was a lie, so that's one of the reasons that they hated him.
They didn't think it was a lie. They felt that it was a misrepresentation of who they were. They felt that he was reporting things that they were doing wrong when they weren't really. He was reporting correct things. He was reporting correctly. They were doing what he said they were doing, but they felt it wasn't wrong. They felt it was right.
Wasn't that showing a lack of respect to their father? Because didn't they trust their father that their father had a special relationship
right.
for Yosef, and that must have been for a reason.
So their anger was not directed at their father,
but
because they felt he was misused
through their love.
They felt he
could have accepted not.
They felt he was misusing what his father was giving them, but they felt that it was their father was giving it to him because he was supposed to have it, but that he was misusing it. They didn't begrudge the fact that perhaps he had a special role to play. Okay. They begrudged the fact that he was going to write them off.
But didn't you say before that he didn't manifest any obnoxious trait that would indicate that he's arrogant? Or
what I said is that he didn't do it in the way that we picture it. He was not a 17-year-old kid walking around strutting his stuff. He was, but on their level, whatever that is, he had not yet perfected that ability to include them in a way that they wouldn't feel written off.
And along the lines that were just mentioned before, if the brothers were such a high level, why couldn't they decipher that? Was it because, you know, everything was meant to be? If there was on such a high level, there were children of Joseph, Isaac, Abraham, why couldn't they decipher that distinction?
They saw that he was acting in a certain way that said to them, he really means to separate us, to treat us as second-class citizens, to himself take over as the sole heir to Judaism.
So was that something, an error, right? Or on their part?
The error is going to go both ways over here. He did act in certain ways that gave them that message. They overreacted. It goes both ways over here. Now we're seeing this in stages, and it's already after 9 o'clock, so we're gonna close up right now. But we're gonna see this in stages. The first few verses, as you see, he reported the evil report to their father. It doesn't say they hated him then. Even though he reported the evil report, they didn't hate him yet. Then he gives them the tunic, and now they hate him because of the way he's acting. But they don't want to kill him yet. Later. And that's what we're going to do next time, Blinetter, are going to be the dreams. And the dreams are going to be the thing that's really going to push them over the edge. So we're seeing this going in stages, each step of the way, and we're building the case. And we're going to see how that's going to eventually lead to the real separation between the brothers and the real rift. And that we're going to develop over the next week or two.
2 weeks March 1st, you have it.
Right. So, well, let's make it clear. Next week, we are having class.
Wait, 7:30.
At the regular time. 7:30 to 8:30, regular time. Next week, that's the 22nd. The following March 1st, we will not have class. That is Jewish Unity Live. And we'll talk about how I encourage everybody to go to that. But that will be March 1st. So then we'll have class next week, and then again, Blinetter on March 8th.